Hello and welcome to the Profitable Practice Podcast with me, Andrea Maxim, naturopathic doctor turned healthpreneur. And every week I'm bringing you no nonsense, no BS, actionable strategies to create a practice that is not only profitable, but fully sustainable by you. If you're an action taker like me and want to create a practice that is profitable, then you've come to the right place. Hello, this is Andrea, your host with the Profitable Practice Podcast, and I'm here with another amazing naturopathic friend of mine who, luckily with the NDDC, this is Allison Chen's website, was nominated one of the top naturopathic doctors to watch for 2016. So I had to, obviously, get her on the show. And today we're going to be talking to Dr. Brooke Kalanick. She is a naturopathic doctor in New York. And I'm basically just going to pass it over to you, Brooke. Give us your background, how naturopathic school went for you, sort of how you've developed into this amazing brand, this Better by Brooke brand that you've created.
Yeah, well, thank you, Andrea. So yeah, I went to Bastyr. I can't believe it's been 11 years ago now when I graduated. So for me, getting started, I actually was a pharmacist before coming to naturopathic medicine. So it was a little bit of an interesting journey for me, having been certain for probably since high school that I wanted to be in the medical profession. I really wasn't quite sure where within that I would land. And I applied to pharmacy school about as soon as I actually could get in, thinking I probably wouldn't get in just yet. And I did. So being a little bit unsure about med school, pharmacy school, anything like that, I went for it and fairly quickly realized that was probably not how I wanted to spend my days as a for the rest of my life. But I did, you know, obviously enjoy the medical training and being a part of the medical field. However, sort of feeling like I wasn't 100% sure that I wanted that to be my daily job for the rest of my life, and feeling a bit of a disconnect with my own health, seeking out naturopathic treatment, and I had an ND of my own, and seemingly really benign things that were going on with me that it's funny now, having been through naturopathic school, I know now what my ND did for me was really, really simple. But at the time, it was so life-changing that I was like, oh my word, she is a genius. I want to do what she's doing. You know, I had been seeing my doctors at school. They thought maybe I had diabetes, my headaches. They thought maybe a brain tumor. I mean, it was just sort of crazy. She did some really minor changes to my diet, which took out a couple foods that were aggravating me, had me eating a little bit more regularly, more protein, more vegetables. I felt a handful of supplements. I felt like a completely different person. So that sort of felt like my perhaps more of a true calling for me, and that was how I was treating my own health. So I made the big switch after being done with my pharmacy coursework to kind of start all over in school. So really without a break, I went through for about 12 years, because once I went to Bastyr, I did the ND program and I did the acupuncture master's, and I also did the master's in Chinese herbal medicine.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was sort of my journey for how I ended up, you know, at Bastyr. And even as a child, my mom was into naturopathic medicine. So it wasn't at all new for me. It just was never something I thought I would do, you know, for a career. So that's how I ended up at Bastyr. I had every intention there of graduating and being, excuse me, I'm getting over a cold, so I have a little bit of a stuffy nose.
That's okay.
So I had every intention of being, you know, a general practice, you know, we're trained to be family care physicians.
Yes.
I had a very, that was really the only thing that I had ever really considered after going there. And obviously, as a woman, I think I had a tendency to think I would probably be happy doing more women's health type of thing. But as time sort of went on, I became much more interested in just metabolic work and really fitness and how exercise sort of fit into exercise and nutrition and fitting that into a bigger part of my practice. And what became, you guys may hear a siren here.
Yeah.
This is New York. People often ask, they're like, are you standing outside? And no, I'm inside my office.
It's just New York. We get it.
So you learn to just ignore it. There may be another one that was probably the ambulance. Sometimes it's followed by a fire truck. So anyway, I became more interested in kind of marrying those two things. And a good friend of mine at Bastyr, Dr. Jade Tita, who you guys may have heard of, him and his brother Keone are very successful with their business Metabolic Effect. And he had always had the intention, of course, of blending fitness and sort of functional medicine and weight loss. And he sort of helped encourage me to go down that path as well. So that became a bigger interest for me. And I wasn't totally sure I could make that work, but I was able to get a few things in place while I was in school and got very lucky to be the person hired by a brand new chain of gyms in Seattle to do their nutrition and wellness programming. So awesome. I went right into that. That was obviously a lot of work while I was still in school to lay that groundwork. But that's how I got started. I practiced in Seattle for a little over a year before, where I had full licensure and scope of practice before I moved to New York, where no one knows what an ND is still. Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really interesting on the East Coast. There's just not as much, even though there's Bridgeport School here in Connecticut, there's not as much knowledge. I feel like the idea of wellness and natural medicine in New York City is, it's very much juice cleanses and yoga.
Got it.
So they don't really have any, and because we're not, you know, covered by insurance or part of the healthcare system here, you know, the way that I felt like I was in Seattle, it's just not as much knowledge about it. And not as many people obviously choose to work in an unlicensed state because there's a pros and cons to being in an unlicensed state, for right. sure, which we can talk about because it's probably a question.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm just going to stop you there. Now, this is a really, really amazing journey and you've touched on a lot of great aspects, but the one that I really wanted to ask you about right now is coming into an area, because this is a question that a lot of new students will always ask. You know, I hear that it's saturated in this place and I think I want to go out east in Canada is what I'm the most familiar with, but it's just not as well recognized. And is that a detriment to my business? And how did you find that transition going from a place like Seattle where it's relatively common stay or at least common language to see a naturopath to a state that, you know, you're having to kind of get the education and really get your clinic thriving from the ground up? What was that transition like?
Yeah, so I think there's downsides to both, right? If you're in a place where everyone knows what naturopathic medicine is, there's going to be more NDs and therefore more saturated. If you're in an unlicensed state, you lose a lot of the things you were trained to do. So, you know, lab testing is a struggle, insurance is a struggle. So there's definitely those, you know, I can't prescribe anything in New York. So yeah. It's different challenges. And I think the one thing to remember too, and I think it's so hard as a new grad because you're already just barely feeling like you know enough to go out and do your job, right? You're mm-hmm. still a little bit, you know, nervous and figuring it out and figuring out not only what you're good at, but what you like. You know, I never really let the idea of a saturated practice sway me because I really think if you're good at what you do, you're going to do okay, right? Yes. So there's that at first, like be good at your job. And then unfortunately, I do think things have changed. When I was in school, we had very little business training. We had one class. It was, you know, hire a bookkeeper and put an ad in the Yellow Pages. And, right. you know, about 2 years after that is when Facebook really broke and became this bigger thing. Like it existed when I was at Bastyr, but not something that any of us were using for our business. So, and I'm sure that that is changing now, but I do think your career, your time at school is very much helping you be an ND and be yes. a physician. And there is a lot of business that's going to have to be learned on your own. So that, and things have changed so much since I was graduating, like I said, 11 years ago now.
Yeah, you basically just aged yourself considering that yes. Facebook was kind of brand new.
Well, it was brand new. I didn't even have a Facebook account when I was at Bastyr. Yeah. I only had email when I was at Bastyr. And now my life revolves on email and, you know, I do Facebook advertising for my practice and it's, you know, become social media is a great, great tool for us to use. So perhaps kind of on the heels of that is standing out wherever you go becomes A, being good at what you do, but largely about how you market yourself. And that's a really kind of a scary thing. A, that we don't really know too much about it. And I think a lot of our stuff tends to get in the way when we start to market ourselves, because you have to really be willing to put yourself out there as, we know, with all your confidence that you are able to help X, Y, and Z and this group of people.
So how did that go? Because I am at, like, as I said, I was kind of speaking to you prior to us starting the recording, is that the branding that you've developed, I think, is phenomenal. As soon as I go onto your website, I mean, I'm already connecting with you, your pictures on your website, and the website, for those that want to check it out, is betterbydrbrooke.com. And the things that you've done with your website, your branding, I mean, for me, because we are attracting mostly women, I'm almost sort of like, yeah, you know what, this woman looks warm. She looks like somebody I could talk to. You have a quiz right on the homepage to get me kind of started thinking about where my body and health is actually at. And that's something that I find, you know, we don't get a lot of business training either. So a lot of the stuff that I've been learning, I've done on my own, and I spend at least 50 to 60% of my time learning business strategies and marketing strategies and branding strategies. So I wanted to ask you, what was your first website like? And then how did it develop into this amazing website that is so clean and crisp and very, very attractive at making me want to become one of your patients?
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because I feel like my website is in a bit of disarray right now. I'm going through some flux. So thank you. I'm glad it's still coming off at least.
Oh, it is to me.
So I've, you know, like I said, 10 years in, you go through some evolution. That was not my first brand. My first brand, I used the word Thrive. And I came at it very general. I kind of had this focus on weight loss and women. But in the beginning, you know, you kind of want to take whatever patients you can get. So I, you know, had to have stuff on there about helping men and working on someone's eczema and stuff. So it did evolve in time for a couple of reasons. One, somewhere about probably halfway through the last 10 years is, you know, I decided to really hone, become a specialist in a couple of conditions and try to be an expert that stood out in a handful of things that I felt I had, you know, really become proficient in, which meant turning a lot of people away. That, you know, when someone calls me and asks if I do, I don't know, I can't even think of anything right now, something really general, like they're worried about heavy metal detox or something like that. You know, I don't do any of that. So I refer those out to other NDs here. So that's a little scary, niching yourself into one thing. We were very much taught to be the jack of all trades. Yes. And that was what I was told to market myself as. And so that was a little bit scary, making the transition. So all my marketing had to change to reflect that.
Yeah.
And like you said, I have invested a small fortune and a lot of my time in learning marketing and branding. I did hire someone to do my branding. So that was working with a graphic designer that helped me get more clear on, I think the main thing when you're working on your branding with someone is they can only do for you what you're hiring them to do. They're great at making things beautiful.
Yes.
But I think you really have to know who you're talking to. So thinking about that woman or that avatar of the people that you're really trying to help. And I don't think you're going to know that when you first start, but in a little bit of time, as your practice sort of grows and you experiment with a couple things, you'll be able to get a more clear picture of how you want to spend your days and what you're really good at, and then what there's a need for. I think a lot of us want to do the thing we really want to do. That may not be the niche that ends up wanting to come to see you, right? So we have to sort of marry what makes you happy and what you're passionate about with what your market also wants from you.
Yep.
So I did, you know, obviously had someone help me with the look and the feel of it. And then the evolution of it really comes with, you know, like, for example, my quiz is there to help me gather emails. So that's what that, it's to give people more of an idea of what it's for. But to take that quiz, you have to give me your email address. So now you're in my inner circle and I can email you every week with, you know, great stuff that I don't put on my blog and great stuff that's not on my Facebook. And that's a really personal email that I send out every week. And that's a whole other thing that I'm definitely a lot better at than I used to be, but I don't feel like I'm anywhere near proficient in internet marketing. But
yes, nor should we have to be. I mean, even I find the struggle of, oh, I have to do this and this, and you have to send things out so many times in order to get traction. And then there's analytics, and it's insane the amount of work that is involved in running a decent social media campaign while you're seeing patients in office and running a brick and mortar practice. It's very difficult to manage both efficiently. So the best you can do, and then you can always hire it out for sure.
Yeah. And I think when you're first starting, you have a little more time. So learning to do more of it on your own, you know, and then you get to the point where your time is worth more seeing a patient and you can hire some of that out. And it's very, you know, there's certainly a place for social media for a local practice as well. It's just a little bit different, who you're targeting and who you're going after. My practice, probably the most interesting evolution for me is that only about maybe 10-15% of my patients are located in the same city as me. Almost everyone is long distance. And that came about for a couple of reasons and certainly was never something I ever envisioned. I really thought I would be in the office one-on-one with patients, being, you know, more of a physician in the sense of doing physical exams and that kind of thing. So part of it was that I was in an unlicensed state and I couldn't do some of those things. So whether or not we were face to face made less of a difference. I mean, I'm also an acupuncturist, which obviously I don't do much of now.
Yes.
But for me, having written a book put me on a bigger scale in front of more eyes that weren't local to me. And then my affiliations with different people online, I write for livestrong.com and I write for Girls Gone Strong. I'm on their advisory board. So I have a lot of, I'm also good friends with and have been a guest and a sort of referred expert for Everyday Paleo, Sarah Fragoso. So I have sort of a network now that's just much beyond my location. So, and that coupled with being such an odd niche. So I am, I guess, like, you know, I work with women with mostly PCOS, Hashimoto's, other hormonal imbalances that are having trouble losing weight. Like, that's really very, very specific. So that brings me patients from all over. I mean, I have a patient right now in Cape Town, Africa, and I have a patient right now in South America, and I have a lot of patients mostly in the US or Canada that just aren't in New York. So that was a somewhat odd evolution that I
had. But it was a risk that you felt you had to take, right? Because you said, you know, defining yourself, niching yourself to a very particular avatar or patient group was scary because of your background. And it is something that, you know, we're also taught that we're not supposed to be specialists, but unfortunately, you do have to, at least in my perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if I'm spending a lot of energy on learning how to treat every single possible condition out there, I don't think I'm ever going to get as proficient at treating every single condition that's out there if I'm, you know, spreading my brain cells over everything. But even for myself, I said, you know what? I really like digestion. Digestion consistently comes walking through my door. So if I get autoimmune or if I get cancer or if I get something that just goes so much further beyond than healing the gut, taking care of any overgrowth, I'm going to refer out. And yeah, of course, that transition is scary, but it sounds to me like with your practice, making that decision and taking that leap of faith has really done basically all those attributes that you just finished describing, the connections that you've made. And the book, of course, is going to speak a lot better if it has a particular point of view as opposed to being so widely generalized. And
yeah, and my book was really a widespread weight loss book. It was written with a personal trainer, and it was sort of after that that I really decided, like, I don't want to just work with everyone who needs to lose weight. I really wanted to hone those other skills because that was, I mean, I have PCOS, I don't have Hashimoto's. So those were things that were really like near and dear to me. The Hashimoto's thing was a little bit interesting. Those just happened to be a group of women that as a weight loss practitioner or specialist, I got a lot of women with Hashimoto's and they never got better. So that was something I had to get good at because they were just so endlessly frustrating and nothing I did worked. So there's that. And I think if you want to be, you know, a general practitioner, you can still really stand out. That all comes down to how you do what you do, right? So I think that a general practitioner, they can still be considered the one who does, you know, something. So if I were to be a general practitioner, I would probably want to work on my marketing in the sense of like, how am I the, what makes me unique about being a general practitioner? It isn't just that I can treat everything or just that I'm an ND. I am the ND that, you know, is excellent at breaking down biochemistry and helping you understand it. So something that you're particularly good at. So if your heart is in general practice and family practice and things like that, in terms of your marketing, it's just, we're all saying the same thing, right? Every ND talks about cleaning up your gut, and every ND talks about hormones, and every, you know, buddy in weight loss talks about insulin. So it is, a lot of it isn't necessarily what we say anymore. It's how we say that. So I think, you know, with some creative marketing about what you're really amazing at and what would make you the person for that particular patient, you could still be a general practitioner. You would just still have to know, again, your avatar. So is your avatar, and what I mean by avatar is just like, who's the person that's your ideal patient? Because it goes both ways, right? We don't want to be working with patients who aren't a right fit for us, but your marketing can really help you get more of the right people, you know, in front of you.
Now, stepping onto that with your marketing, how did you start developing some of these amazing connections with people and the like media traction? You've been in Allure and Whole Living and Women's Health. Like, how did you create those relationships? How did you put yourself out there to start developing some of these, what I would consider high-end media outlets?
Yeah. So this for me, this is actually really interesting because this is not at all how I thought this happened. You know, I guess I kind of thought I'll just be really awesome at what I do and somehow the word will get out, right? And so a couple of things happened. One, I live in New York City. So I come in contact with, you know, girls that are editors at Cosmopolitan Magazine. I'm affiliated with, one thing I did do right away is since I was in this weight loss niche is, as soon as I moved to New York City, I got affiliated with some of the high-end gyms. So I was working with, because I'm out of pocket. I'm not going to be someone you go to for insurance. I'm sort of fluff, right? I'm not necessary. I needed to find some clients who could
afford it,
at least in the beginning, and that were interested in, you know, my take on what they were doing. So that was a really dovetailed really nicely with personal training for me. So having made those relationships, you know, got me in front of more of those people. So I got in front of more people who worked on the Today Show and work on major magazines. And then as far as what you see on my website, a lot of that, which I didn't really know how this would work either, when I wrote my book with Jojo Dell is his name. He's the owner of a gym here in New York City. We wrote the book together. It was his book deal. I came on later. He needed me later to fill in some of the gaps. I ended up being a much bigger collaboration between us. I was initially hired to do one chapter. If you look at the book, that's not what we ended up doing.
Right.
So because I had the relationship with him, I lectured at his gym. You do a lot of stuff for free for a really long time. So one of my pieces of advice is to take those opportunities when someone asks you to speak, or even if you're not getting paid, it's really, really about those relationships. So he heard my talk that I gave to his trainers. He's like, you're exactly what I've been looking for. He fired the RD that was going to write his book and hired me on.
Wow. And
collaboration. So much of what you see there was in a big push for us with the book. So because we had a major publisher, they put us in front of people, right? So they tried to get little features in different magazines. And then you pay for that. You know, you hire someone to do your PR who has those connections at, you know, different media outlets, whether that's a TV clip or a magazine. And then what I did when I was going through that is that was, you know, cost a ton of money to have someone do PR like that, but it does get you those opportunities. So what I did is just really, again, cultivated those relationships. If I was part of a story so let's take Martha Stewart, for example. Our PR people got us an interview on the Whole Living. It's not on anymore. It was the Whole Living radio show on Sirius Radio. So it was on the Martha Stewart channel, which they had us on for a guest. And I just followed up with a thank you email. And I offered to help the woman that interviewed us with something she had been complaining. She was complaining about her low blood sugar when we were on the show. And I was like, I can absolutely help you with that for free. You know, gave her a little bit of advice. I kept in touch with her. And so when it came up again, she's like, we're doing this detox series. Could you be our expert for us? So it really is, you know, I the buying PR and us paying for our PR people to help get us some of those opportunities, you know, that's just a one-off, right? They got us featured in a couple magazines, but it's that ongoing relationship and becoming a resource for them so that when it came up, so for Whole Living is a great example because I was on their radio show two more times. And then with the magazine, they every year start the new year off with like a new year, a new you detox. So they asked me to do that the next year. So I got to be featured in a huge spread that's like half the magazine for a January issue. Same thing with your, if you're ever interviewed by someone, Leslie Goldman is a pretty well-known health writer. She writes for O Magazine, et cetera. She interviewed us for something. She had Hashimoto's. So I, you know, jumped on that this is something I can really help you with. So I became a resource for her. She quotes me all the time. She interviewed me for the piece in Natural Health Magazine, which is one of the ones featured on my blog. So that comes from somehow getting your foot in the door, whether you're able to, you know, afford PR. I mean, it made sense for us because we were trying to sell a book.
Yes.
And we had a little bit of help from our publisher, but not that much. Most of that was something we had to put our own resources behind. So if you can do that, great. But, you know, there's still the opportunity to, you know, help those people who, you know, they're going to need a resource at some point. And the other thing too, is I think it gets tricky, especially as you get a little bit bigger, you know, you get a lot of emails from people wanting your time and you get a lot of Facebook questions, people wanting your time. And something I've learned is do your best to answer those. You never know. Not only are you helping that person, but it gets a little tricky, right? We want to be paid for our time and our expertise, and you should be, that's a whole other conversation. But if, you know, answering those questions, you never know where some of that will lead. So when you look at my website, yeah, I do have a lot of those pieces and some of that was purchased. But I think the reason I continue to get quoted and stuff is because I tried really hard to be a great resource for those people that were interviewing me and kept in touch and, you know, did all that follow up.
And for those people that may not necessarily have a book or take the same journey as you did, let's say they're really proficient with writing or they want to do more videos, I'm sure you could still pave the way for yourself in some way, shape, or form. And again, you know, ask your patients who, exactly as you did, that are in some of these places that you'd like to be and be like, hey, you know what? Just in case you're ever looking, I would love to be, you know, a guest speaker for you. And that was one thing that I learned with my publisher is that even the people that you think are so far beyond your reach, they're always looking for people to help. They're looking for new perspectives. They're looking for, you know, that next person that might, exactly what you did, sort of become their routine. You know, if I'm in a pinch, I can always ask Dr. Brooke.
Yeah. And I mean, the great thing about, even though it's a lot of work for us now, I mean, the great thing about the internet is, I mean, you can have a whole YouTube channel full of your videos. Like you can't promote yourself and you, and honestly, the more of that stuff you have, the better. Cause when someone's looking for an expert and they see that you've got a regular blog and that you're active on your social media channels. And I mean, my YouTube page is dismal, but, sort of my goal for this year, I also have two small babies. So, some of my stuff the last 4 years is, you know, kind of doing as much as I can.
Yes, of course.
Business, but you can promote yourself a lot. And that looks great when someone wants you to be an expert because they can, you know, you just, it lends so much credibility and they can get to know you, right? They can see, you know, how, what your stuff looks like and what you're really good at. And media training is something that I invested in for myself the last 5 years. And that's been really, really amazing to, I think, you know, you want to get the interview, but you also want to not only talk about what you know how to talk about, but be interesting to listen to.
Yes.
Some of those things we don't realize we do, like raise our voice at the end of every sentence. And, you know, I have a really young sounding voice anyway, so that lilting that I do makes me sound even more unprofessional. So media training was something that I'm sure there's some inexpensive online options. I did end up hiring a coach. Actually, the person I knew from Martha Stewart was my media coach trainer. So I think that that's if you want to be on video and you know, want to get your ideas out. Video is a great format. People love that. Short 90-second videos is about the attention span of people.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of people have incredible success because they have a large video content. I mean, writing's sort of my medium, that I have a lot of written content on the web and not as much video. But That's something I never thought I would spend money on, but it's proved to be very helpful.
Well, that's just it, right? You just never know. You never know where your year is going to take you. You never know what your passion is going to be. And I think it is important for people to understand that it does cost money and it does take risk in order to get out in front of a bigger population than just who's around you locally. And it does take a lot of time and effort and consistency as well. So I think these are all wonderful tips that you're giving everyone.
Yeah. And I think, you know, some people want to be, bigger on a, statewide or national scale. And some people don't. They really want to serve their local community.
Oh, sure.
But then, it's about getting on your local news, right? And it's about getting in your local paper. So it's all the same stuff applies. It's just knowing which audience you wouldn't need to get yourself in front of. And with the internet now, it's so easy for us to get in front of a bigger audience, right?
Yes.
So I think the places you would put yourself are different, but the logic still applies. And something to remember too about press is, I think people, like my website may reflect this now. I don't know. I mean, I know I used to look at people that had tons of press and I was like, oh my gosh, they must just be going gangbusters, right? They're probably, making millions of dollars a year. Their practice is completely full. Obviously what we put on our website is our best stuff, right? So it's about marketing is about, creating a demonstration, right? Your website should be reflective of, what you've accomplished. And so that's great. I know my first bit of press was a fluke. I guess my point of this is that it builds upon itself. It's not like it's just that and then everything changed. It's
right.
The more press you have, the better. My very first little bit of press, I had a patient who was a girl who worked in PR. And so she said, something came across my desk today. The New York Times is doing a feature on should you hire a nutrition coach, like a nutritionist. She said, I know it's not totally what you do, but New York Times, big deal. Would you be interested? And I said, yes, of course. So they quoted me and she ended up spending a fair amount of time with me, partly because, of course, she had to also explain what I did because I wasn't a nutritionist.
Yes.
And so I got quoted. I had a couple of sentences in this article in the New York Times, and I was just convinced that would be it, right? This would be this huge press outlet, the Sunday Times, the most read newspaper in the country. And I thought everything would change. I mean, I got 4 new patients from that. So it's a good credit. I had a couple new people in the door, but it was a really good instant lesson, kind of a little bit of a reality check that's great to be in the New York Times, but it's about all of those things being cumulative. And so now I have a bigger breadth of press. But I know when I thought I first started, I was like, a couple of those big things, it'll just hit really hard and that'll put me on the map. And it's just continuing to keep working,
Well, yeah, just like you have your 15 minutes of fame and that can go away very quickly. So it is a great platform. It's great to continue to get yourself into doors, but you definitely can't stop the hustle in one way, shape, or form, for sure.
Yeah, and when you have like 10 pieces of press, like that really builds momentum. Now you're a much more credible resource.
Yes.
When the magazine is looking. So yeah, they all add up to something really big for yourself and your practice. But I know that I thought it would just take one big one to change.
Yeah, and sometimes it can.
Excited.
But.
And I don't know if anyone that follows me probably knows my affiliation with Girls Gone Strong. So my friend Molly, who's the head of Girls Gone Strong, she owns that company, on New Year's Day posted a photo on Facebook and it went viral. So for the weeks following, she was on everything from the todayshow.com, the Huffington Post. I mean, on Twitter, there was celebrities sharing her stuff. She had multiple celebrities reposting this photo. So it was truly viral, truly huge. It jumped her Facebook page by about 50,000 people.
Wow.
It jumped Girls Gone Strong Facebook page by probably about the same, maybe not quite as much as her personal page. And then it's gone, right?
Yes.
So even something that hits that hard, where the whole internet was on fire talking about this trainer in her bikini who didn't care about losing weight and just kind of showing up as she is. So it was a great message. It grew her social media platform, but it's not like someone knocked on the door that day and like, here's your book deal.
Yeah.
And here's $1 million. So all of those things, as big as they are, continue to just help you build your platform and get whatever it is that you are good at and passionate about talking about and feel that can really help people, it just helps you get that message out more and more.
Awesome. Awesome. And I'd like to just take a quick step back and talk about the lead magnet. So this is a very, very primitive, very easy place to start generating that list, to start generating people wanting to follow you and to start sharing you. Did you try multiple lead magnets before you had your quiz on your website?
Well, I did what most people did, right? You have a little sign up that says, get my newsletter.
Yes.
And the thing is now everybody gets so much email. So there will be some people who just, you know, love what you have to say and want to be a part of that. And they'll sign up for your newsletter. The thing now is there's so much email. So that space is just so crowded, right? Everybody's deleting emails, getting off lists. So that becomes a good list building tool if you've got really great content, right? So if someone takes my quiz, they get a free 2-page report about any of the hormones that they had an imbalance in. So let's say you took my quiz and it looked like you have some estrogen, progesterone imbalance, elevated cortisol. And again, this is just sort of symptom based, right? It's not a test. And it looks like you have a thyroid thing. So for any of those, they got a free protocol. So totally free advice from me, because that's what they're getting. They can get so much stuff on the internet for free. So you have to be willing to really give a lot of your stuff away, which is, I was so hard for me in the beginning, because I was like, how am I going to pay my rent, right? If how I need a patient to come sit here and get this advice that I worked so hard for. So two things. One, it's out there for free. So whatever it is that you're telling them has to have your spin on it. Something about it has to be special and unique to you, because there's so many people saying the same thing.
Yes.
And you do give a ton of stuff away, because that's A, how you start a relationship. B, nothing you write on a PDF and put it up for free is as good as if someone sits down and talks to you. So keep in mind, even if you say the exact same thing on a consult that you put out in a free email, it's going to be different when it's one-on-one with you. There's going to be some added value in that. Plus, it gets them in your door, it earns their trust, and then you can, you know, take them to the next level. So they could, they get that for free. And then there's a very small upsell for $79. For $7.99, they could get a more specific protocol.
Right.
And then obviously that's a little barrier to entry for them to, you know, start working, getting in my, you know, my little group. So when we get so many emails, here comes another siren, guys.
Yep, we're good.
yeah, it just sounds like just mayhem here, but you can get your email content, again, has to be just so tailored to that avatar that you're speaking with. So when I just talk about gluten sensitivity, or if I just talk about getting your, you know, TH1 and TH2 normalized with turmeric or vitamin D when I'm talking to a patient with Hashimoto's, the way that I talk about those things in the email, so we started asking about lead magnet, but in terms of content and what you do when you actually get those emails, there's a whole way I say the same thing that you might say the exact same thing, but I talk about it. My big thing with women is I'm trying to help them be their own best friend. Mm-hmm. So putting your hormones in line is a way of you being your best friend. You might say the same thing as this is a way to keep up with, you know, our modern living. That might be your thing. Like, I'm trying to help you with your prehistoric genes, live in the modern world.
Sure.
We might say the exact same thing. So when you've got those email addresses and you start speaking to them, you're going to get a lot of opinions. A lot of people say send out that newsletter once a month. Some people say email them twice a day. You have to do a little experimenting with what works. My emails are so personal, so I tend to do that once a week. And it's a little bit more touchy-feely than what I put on my blog. On my blog, I talk a little more like, this is why you need to get tested beyond your TSH. So a little bit more practical.
Yes.
So the lead magnet and the email marketing, I'll be honest, this is very new for me. I only started really doing that in the last couple of years. So I started with just like the general newsletter, and I tried to do my best with that. I was not very consistent with keeping up on it. I was a little bit better about with my blog. So I feel like things for me have sort of come together in the last couple of years with the different kinds of marketing. And, you know, I probably would be further ahead had I been doing that for a long time.
But it's always the case, right? Yeah, it's always the case.
So for me, it's a little bit different. I didn't use the lead magnet to build my popularity. I guess I sort of had a pretty good platform when I started doing that. So gathering emails for me has been pretty easy, because I think if you look at my social media channels, my blog, there's a pretty good sense of who I am. So I think that the lead magnet converted really well. I mean, I switched from a regular sign up to a pop-up. Pop-ups.
Yes, I saw that.
Convert a little bit better. And having multiple sources to gather those emails, which I just didn't put a lot of, I didn't know anything about email marketing and how important that was, because I think I sort of thought, well, you just sell to your Facebook fans, right? Those people are going to come see you. It's just such a huge pool. And the people that are reading your email every week, they're the ones who already know, like, and trust you. Yes. So they're going to be the ones who are more apt to remember you when they go to their doctor and see that they have hypothyroidism. They're going to think, I really better go check with her. So I sort of did that backwards. And I don't think that I'm doing that nearly as good as some of our colleagues are doing. And I don't solely want to be in the online business. I know a lot of people are trying to create programs. My particular group of women don't do well with a generic approach. They really need the one-on-one. So my goal is to get more patients versus trying to create, you know, a $97 program that I can sell a ton of to the masses. So
for sure.
And some people are doing awesome with that. Like, that is really, you know, there's digestion programs like that. There's weight loss programs like that. And some of our colleagues are doing really, really well with that. My particular group of patients doesn't do well with that approach. So not to say that's not another thing to consider for your practice, is some, like, you know, one-off programs that generate some passive income. I mean, having passive income and multiple streams of revenue really becomes important, because you do get tired. You do need to take a sick day. There is times when your practice will wax and wane. I still have a natural, you know, lull in the summer in New York City. Everyone's gone in August. Everyone goes somewhere to get out of the sea. So my practice, I could essentially take the whole month off in August.
Wow. Okay.
So there will be some lulls that you'll be prepared for one way or another, hopefully. But, you know, just something to think about as far as passive income and those sort of programs. You know, there's a lot of it out there. It's a little bit harder. That market is sort of saturated. So pricing those, or in a way that they're really accessible, or, you know, really ensuring that you've got a very unique take on, like, digestion's a great one. I mean, there's a whole bunch of Gut Thrive and Five and Fix Your Digestion. There's a lot of those programs out there. So we always have to remember, why should they buy our program?
Right. And it kind of goes back to everything else. As soon as people start to like the way you explain things, they like the personality, they like the energy you're giving, you could duplicate every, like, another program exactly the way that it's set up, but with your spin on it, those people are going to love it. So, you know, there's always this fear of, well, there's so many of those out there already, or so many people are doing this already. Why would anybody want to buy mine? And you kind of nailed it. You know, it's your spin, it's your personality, it's your energy that's going into it. And people want to hear it from you because they trust you.
Yeah. And I mean, I deal with that every day. I mean, I'll go to write something and I'm like, oh my word, this has been said 8 different ways. Everyone already knows this. And, you know, and so you have to catch yourself with that for 2 reasons. One, like you just said, someone's going to want to hear it from you, or they've heard it 10 times. It never sunk in until you told them,
right,
from the way that you spoke to them was the right way for them to hear it. And also, you know, it is out there, you know, a lot, but I think when you're an expert in it, you're so close to it, you forget, you know, that not everyone knows everything that you do, because you've done it and you've said it so many times and you're so proficient at it that it's just second nature, and you forget that it's completely brand new information for so many people. So I think I still fight that a lot. I think that's one of those things that comes down to all of the work we have to do on our growth and development, right? Is continuing to work on our confidence and value, you know, whatever it is that we're putting out there. Because we are all kind of saying the same thing, right? There's some new cutting edge stuff that comes out from time to time where we find out something new and cool that works really well, or some new research helps us create something different. But a lot of it is, you know, just finding your tribe. I recommend that the book Tribes by Seth Godin, or anyone to even follow Seth Godin, because he talks a lot about that, of, you know, finding the people that are your people.
Yeah.
Who needs to hear it from you? And again, with the internet, you've got a much bigger net to catch your people than just the people in your local town.
And just to kind of add on to that, I keep forgetting how many of my patients have never heard of a lot of the big people that I follow in the health right. industry or business industry. And I'm like, oh, you must have heard of this person. They're like, no, I have no idea who that is. The only person I know of is you and maybe two other people. So it's amazing how different people will also follow groups that you may not have ever even heard of, or people that you thought everybody has heard of and read about, and they haven't. So you just never know.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, other resources. So Seth Godin, I think, is phenomenal. One of my favorite books that I can remember is The Purple Cow. And it was sort of like when you're driving down a road and you pass by all of these fields with regular old, you know, brown and black cows. And then you pass by this one field and it has a purple cow. And you remember that. It's something memorable. I loved that book. But what other resources have you really found have changed your business mindset, your business physically, that you've really adapted from?
Oh gosh, this is so many. Let's just go with like current things that I've been reading. I mean, in terms of, I think this is so many because it sort of depends on what you're looking at. Selling for me was really hard, like trying to sell myself. So books that were, you know, good at that. Daniel Pink is an author that's pretty interesting and good psychology. Oh my gosh, I'm drawing such a blank. I'm Gary Vaynerchuk, or however you spell his name. Yep, he's great at business, really simple, short books, which I feel like that's good for business, good for social media for sure.
And I think his latest book was Jab, Jab, Right Hook or something like that.
Yeah, which is a great one. Yeah. I actually really liked that one. It was very, again, very easy to read. His stuff is really, that one was a good perspective on, I think this is doing a program is a perfect example. Like we expect we're going to put all this sweat, blood and tears into a program. We're going to put it out and then it's just going to go crazy. Right. And that's the whole jab, jab, right hook. Like you have to keep putting it in front of people before you deliver the big punch. So this isn't along the book lines exactly, but I think that one thing, and I know I've made this mistake, is we forget how much we have to nurture our people and how much they have to see the same thing before it really, you know, clicks and, you know, connects with them. So you really do need to answer those free questions, and you really need to, if you're trying to get more people in from the big net of the internet, right? So if you're trying to work your Facebook page to get more people in your office, I used to do a weekly Q&A and it was an hour of my time. I answered a ton of questions, but it grew my Facebook page exponentially. And I did get a handful of those people into my practice, but you know, it was a lot of free advice. And we had to be careful with the medical advice, not to give too much, but you know, providing them more things to think about and more resources. And especially in the case with my patients, like they just really need to feel like someone's listening. So many of my patients are the women who've been at different doctors and they're like, you're fine.
Continue. Right. Now, how did you host that Q&A?
You know, I just advertised it that I'll be hosting a Q&A, and I just posted one status update and I just said, post your questions below. And then I just responded to each question.
Oh, amazing. Totally
something people could do. You know, anybody can do that and it's free. It would cost you some time. But yeah, that grew my Facebook page. That really took me from, that was interesting actually. So this was only a few years ago. This was before my daughter was born. So within 5 years, I had about 500 fans and I'm just about to clear 10,000 right now. So that's a pretty short period of time.
That's amazing.
That took me from 500 to 5,000 within a year.
Wow.
So that was really, that was something it made, you know, as you're a lot more active, and the way the algorithm works in Facebook is consistency for sure. And the more you're posting, so you're having all those multiple posts in that one day. So that will help you show up in the feed for people that do like your page. And I got a lot of people like, you know, tell your friends, and it's free access to you. People love that, right? Like again, even if people don't ask questions, a lot of people will just follow along. So if you're, you know, a general practitioner, you could just pick a month where 5 times or 6 times that month, you did a Q&A and you could pick different topics. Mine was very specific to those two conditions, Hashimoto's and PCOS, and I answered questions about those for an hour.
Awesome. I think that's a great tool.
Yeah, that worked really, really well, actually. I did that, and I don't have the time to do that right now, but it works really good for growing.
Cool. Right. Any other little tips that you found that you can implement very simply, cost next to nothing, that the listeners could potentially start doing as soon as we're done the call almost?
Yeah. I mean, I think the email building, get a little bit savvy with how to email your list and start to cultivate your list, because that is, it's a completely captivating audience. They've already said by giving you their email address that they like what you have to say. So give them really good stuff, whether it's a recipe or, you know, one night I was having just an utter terrible night. I felt like everywhere I looked on social media, all these like, you know, women that didn't have kids were flitting off to all corners of the globe. Aww. And I was just like in a, you know, I don't think I'd showered in 2 days. I had a newborn and a 3-year-old, and my kitchen was just full of dishes. And so my list is segmented. I know who the women who are breastfeeding are because I did a free download for fat loss and breastfeeding. So all of those women are, I use Infusionsoft, which is just one of many email services out there. And so my list is segmented that way. So that night when I was having a meltdown, I sent them a, just like a little love note. And I just said, for anyone else kind of going through the same thing, you know, I've been there before because I had another daughter. This was my second baby. It gets better. Make sure you're making time for yourself. Get some sleep. Have a small glass of wine. Call a friend. Like, yeah. I was able to. So I think those emails can be, you need them to be really useful, good content. For me, I've had great success making them very personal. That's not everybody's brand, for sure. But knowing what is your brand and your gift and what you can do, that's kind of the stuff that you give to your inner circle. It just continues to cultivate that relationship. So you will be who they turn to when they, you know, need someone to do it, to do something like what you do, exactly what we were saying. There's a lot of people that do what we do. What makes you, you know, unique and special. As far as that, gathering the list, I mean, having, like we talked about the lead magnet, I use Lead Pages to get those email signups, which is pretty inexpensive, very easy to work with. I'm completely technologically retarded, so believe me, if I can do any of this, you all can too. I know I sound like such an old lady, but for example, if you write a post on food sensitivities or testing, or you write a post on getting better sleep, or you write a post on managing stress, having a free email sign up at the bottom of that is such a, I mean, I missed this opportunity for, you know, 8 years, right? So if I write a blog post on sleep, you can specifically just put a little, you put it on the bottom of your webpage. Just if you want a free report or my 10 best tips for sleep, and you put together you know, something you already know, it's really easy for you to generate 10 things that would help someone sleep better, your favorite bedtime teas. It can be something really simple that you can do relatively quickly. They click on that, they get a free download that was something you didn't put in your post. It's more of the stuff that they already like. Let them know it's special, it's unique, it's not on this post. If you want more, they give you your email address, and you've got, you know, again, a wider range to market to when you're looking to sell a program or get them into your services. So it really is all that stuff. The more content that is really valuable to people is what we want to do, right? We really want to give a lot of value so that there's a reason for them to continue to pay attention to what you have to say. So when it's time for them to decide they want to work with a naturopathic doctor or a functional medicine practitioner, or buy your a program, or buy a supplement if you have an online store, you're gonna be the person that they trust. And just hang in there with that stuff. It takes a long time to build those relationships. I hear a lot of advice of like, just put together a program and throw it up, or you just graduated and someone wants you to say you're an expert in whatever. And I think we have to earn that a little bit. Like, you have to put in a little bit of time before, and give away a lot of that free stuff. And it's not that you're not an expert or that you're not good at what you do, but you need a little time before someone is going to put their trust in you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, nurturing that with your blog and your posts, that you just create more opportunities for you to give people good stuff, so that when you are ready to sell them something, you've already created a really good relationship and they're happy.
Absolutely.
To put their hard-earned money in your pocket to have you help them versus someone else.
Absolutely. Well, I think you have touched on so many wonderful things with regards to branding and cultivating relationships to get you in front of a larger audience, and talking about lead pages, and just basically be yourself and just be transparent. You know, don't try to make yourself bigger than you are when you're not there yet. Don't be afraid to give away free stuff. I think all of that is wonderful and stuff that we definitely need to be doing every single day. Do you have any other final things that you've been dying to let people know, whether they're just getting started or they're sort of in the trenches?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think our profession, it's an interesting one, right? There's people that don't have any idea what we do. There's a lot of people criticizing us. I got nailed yesterday for being an ND giving advice and not an MD, and on the something that I posted for Girls Gone Strong. So I think something that's important that we probably forget when we talk about how do you get a lead magnet and how do you generate your email list and how do you do Facebook marketing is, as you're working on your, you know, personal growth and the thing that helps your communication so much. So as you start to put yourself out there more, people are going to criticize you. There will be someone who's like, you're an idiot. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much, I don't think, about just developing a thick skin, but I think just always coming from a genuine place of, I'm trying to help someone. I'm putting out the best information I have. When people criticize, like, for example, yesterday, I mean, the response I wrote back, of course, is as gracious and generous as I can be, you know, and putting yourself in that position of, my only goal is to help the women with Hashimoto's that feel lousy, right? Mm-hmm. So from that point, I can say, well, this is why I said what I said, and here's some studies to back up that recommendation, and here's why I think that, and I so much appreciate your concern. Of course, we're all, this was an MD that was saying,
yes,
I didn't know what I was doing, you know, and appealing to them as you're another clinician, trying to, it gets hard though. I mean, with those, I also got called fat when I wrote my book. I had a nasty Amazon review from this girl who was like, I don't know who this girl thinks she is to be giving weight loss advice with blah, 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 blah. So as you put yourself out there, that stuff's gonna happen. And how you handle that really makes you shine and people love you even more. So we talk a lot about all the development you have to do with your clinical skills and with your business, but like all of us, continuing to work on our own, I guess, our self and our confidence and things like that will help you as you get into this further. We know the criticism and the online stuff. And I don't really feel I've ever been quote unquote trolled, but I've had a handful of those things happen.
Yeah.
And you're a person and it's going to hurt and it's going to be hard and you're going to want to defend yourself. But there's a way to do that that almost makes those, like that, for example, the girl that called me fat, that turned out to be a pivotal point in my career and how I talk to women. Because before I had a lot of that same fear, right? The reason that bothered me is because everything she said, I'd already said to myself. So when she said that, I was like, oh my God, she's totally right. I've finally been found out. I'm not 12% body fat. Who the hell is going to listen to me? And so all that stuff came up and I realized a lot of what I had put out, I'd been really careful to make it sound like I had it all figured out. Like, I've got it all figured out. This is, you know, going on for me. And so it really changed how that wasn't really serving me. That wasn't really being very authentic because I was scared of someone saying the exact same thing. And of course, she said this at a time where I've never been in better shape in my whole life. So it was sort of ironic for me. But I think when those things happen, that for me was just a pivotal point. Like I said, in the way that I changed everything about how I came across and, became totally transparent and talk about cellulite and talk about, you know, all kinds of stuff on both on my blog, on my page, in my email letters. And I'm still giving like the scientific content, but I'm coming from a much more genuine voice. So I think it's good as you put yourself out that there more, just know it will happen. Don't be scared of it. Don't wait for it. It'll come. It will find its way to you.
Yeah.
But I think that remembering that is, can be one of the biggest gifts. I wish I could send that girl like a bottle of champagne. She really changed everything for me and my practice just expanded and exploded because of something that I thought before would be the sure thing that made everyone think I was a fraud.
Right. You just never know.
You never know. So rather than handling those, just use it, you know, all that stuff as an opportunity for you to grow and to be even more to the people you're trying to serve. I think some of that can really... Our stuff, I think, really dictates the people that we should be helping, you know? So using that to kind of help you hone your voice if you're trying, especially to be on a bigger stage. But don't waste any time being scared of it. It will happen. Some doctor from Harvard will tell you you're an idiot and we got to be, you know, okay with that and continue to do the best job that we can and be as science-based as we can be. We get attacked for that a lot. And I think that the better work we do, you know, we're really, it's hard because we're really helping everyone, right? We're helping not only our patients, but the better job we do, we're going to help this profession as well.
For sure. Okay, Dr. Brooke, if people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way?
Probably my email, which is Dr. Brooke, DrBrooke, at betterbydrbrooke.com.
Awesome. And I will have all the links to your website and everything else in the show notes, which is on the website, maximizedbusiness.ca. But I just want to thank you again so much for being so candid and honest with us about your journey, about some of the hurdles that you've had to go over, the hustle that you've had. I think it's been really inspiring, and I'd love to have you on again, maybe a year from now, and we'll see how many Facebook fans you have then and what else is going on in your life.
Yeah, that 10,000 mark is coming up, which is a big milestone.
Yeah,
so
of course.
Thank you. I wish I would have had you as a resource when I was first graduating, because I was utterly clueless. So I guess even for the, you know, initially clueless, naive, and technologically retarded of us, you can still make it, right? You just got to keep learning. So thank you for doing this for our colleagues.
No problem. Okay, everyone, I hope you are ready to take action. There is no reason why you cannot implement at least one of the things that we talked about today. And I want you to do that as soon as you're done listening to the show. Definitely contact me if you would like me to help you grow your business one-on-one, or if you just have questions, concerns, podcast topics, if you want me to interview you, if you have something to say, I would love to do that. Again, the website is maximizedbusiness.ca. This is your host, Andrea Maxim, with the Profitable Practice Podcast, and I'm out. You guys are killer. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Profitable Practice Podcast. Leave me a comment, and if you haven't already, I would love a review in iTunes. Definitely subscribe to this podcast and leave me a quick review. For those ready to maximize your practice, contact me at www.maximizedbusiness.ca.